Harih Om Sahana Vavatu Sahanau Bhunaktu Sahaviryankaravavahai Tejasvinavadhitamastumavidvishavahai Om Shanti Shanti Shantihi Om Jaya Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhara Shiva Sari Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. So then Dhritarashtra is then again, you know, in his anxiety because he sees that his son is, you know, really going down the wrong path. It's the first time he's ever said that he's wrong. And so he's asked Sanjay to repeat to him what Krishna had said. And so then he had described the one meeting. So now he describes this meeting, you know, with the Pandavas. Now he's describing how he met with Krishna and Arjuna on their own. He went to their room, they gave him, showed him a place to stay. He sat on the floor. And then they came over, you know, both sat, stood up and came over to him. And so then he, you know, and he could understand it, you know, here is, you know, how you say, just like the great person, Indra and Vishnu together. And so then in that, he closed his eyes as he recalled the sight. Then he said, he was silent for some moments. Then he continued in a subdued voice. After they had reassured me and offered me foods and drink, I placed my clasped hands on my head and told them of your desire for peace. O King, Arjuna then asked Krishna to make a suitable reply, whereupon the Yadava leader spoke. His words are charming and mild, but their import was terrible. They were calculated to inspire fear in your son's heart. He said, O Sanjaya, say this before Dhritarashtra and all the Kuru elders after offering them our respects and asking after their welfare. Tell them that they should now perform auspicious sacrifices and make numerous gifts to the Brahmanas. Then they should make merry with their wives and sons, for they will soon face a calamity. I am thinking now of my debt to Draupadi, which is still not paid. That chaste lady purchased me for all time when she cried out, O Govinda, amid the Kurus who were afflicting her with pain. Tears streamed down Sanjaya's face as he thought of how Krishna gave himself completely to whoever sought his shelter. Krishna then spoke the following words. The Kurus have made the wielder of the Gandiva bow, with me as his second, their enemy. Who would dare challenge us in battle, even if the gods assisted them, unless their time had come? Right? So he's pointing out, is do all these nice things, give do sacrifices, give in charity to the Brahmins, spend quality time with your family and children, because your time has come. Your time's up. Otherwise, why would you make Arjuna and Krishna your enemy? When in the universe it's known, no one defeats Nara Narayan. When the demigods can't defeat somebody, but the whole host, they call for Nara Narayan. The two of them come in and destroy everything. So only if your time has come, your lifespan is finished, then you would make enemies with them. So he's pointing, but he's saying it very pleasantly. He's just making it a matter of fact. He who defeats Arjuna could hold up the earth in his two arms, could burn up all creatures and destroy the heavens. Among all the beings within the three worlds, I do not see any equal to Arjuna in battle. In other words, the only one who's greater than him is, than Arjuna is himself. The only great one greater than Nara is Narayana. So when the two and they are together, they're one. You say Nara Narayan Rishi. Right? It's two rishis, but you call them as one. They're Narayan Rishi, because the Lord and his energy, the Lord and his devotee, the Lord and the Jiva Tattva. It's one, you know, like Jagannath, Baladev, Subhadra, they're considered one deity. Three forms, but one deity. So they always go together. Surely the fight at the Matsya kingdom was sufficient evidence of that. what to speak of his encounter with the Danavas in the netherworld. Right, so he's already, it means they should have, that fight at the Matsya kingdom, they should have easily understood there, because he was alone. And, you know, with a young boy, good, nicely trained, a person as his charioteer. And it wasn't, there was no need of tricks of the charioteer. He just, he knew how to drive, so he could take here, he could take there, he could do those things. And so Arjuna already defeated everybody. Right? And then at the end, released the cows, did all this and that. With half of the Kuru army, with Duryodhana at the head, Arjuna just went in such a way that he separated the two and then drove them all back. Drove means the cows went back to the kingdom, and Duryodhana had to go back to the other half of the army. And so Krishna's point was that not sufficient? And what to speak, and that was there you saw directly, and what to speak that he went to the heavenly planets and demons that the demigods could not defeat, Arjuna did alone. And not only that, he went after one group, and on his way by, he saw another group that just happened to be there at the time, and he destroyed them also. Strength, agility, prowess, lightness of hand, untiring energy, and patience reside always in Arjuna and in no one else. Like all these things. Like someone might be patient or have great energy or lightness of hand or these things, but to have all of them at once, that's the uniqueness of him. Consider all this carefully before beginning hostilities, O Kurus. Sanjaya then told the Kurus that Krishna planned to come to Hastinapur himself to encourage peace. Dhritarashtra sat with his head bowed, right? Because the Supreme Personality of Godhead has now said that it appears that you're making an enemy you want fight, your time is over. So therefore, spend it doing nice things. Be nice. Do auspicious activities. Give in charity. Spend your time with the family, because this is the last you're going to see them. You go to this battle, you will not come back. And by doing pious things, then at least in your next life, you'll be elevated. Dhritarashtra sat with his head bowed. He had spent many a long night pondering Arjuna's power, trying to weigh whether it could be countered by any of the Kuru warriors. It was hard to decide. Now that Arjuna was united in battle with Krishna, the odds had shifted dramatically. Krishna's power was impossible to estimate. He was said by the rishis to be the lord of all divinities. Opposing him would surely mean opposing the gods themselves, right? So, because Dhritarashtra is not a devotee, he can't actually understand Krishna. Right? You can only understand the Supreme Lord when there's devotion, and then he reveals himself. Because being beyond matter, you cannot, using matter or your mind, intelligence, your ego, all these things, you cannot understand who Krishna is. But he's heard from great sages, they've told him all these things, but it doesn't really have serious meaning to him. The blind king spoke out with apprehension. These descriptions of Arjuna and Krishna only convince me all the more of the folly of war. O Duryodhana, think again. Think with whom you will be fighting. Great men always repay their debts. Agni is indebted to Arjuna for his assistance at Kandava. He will surely help Arjuna in the war. So will the god Dharma align himself with his son Yamaraj. Bhima is Vayu's son, and the twins are born from the two Ashwini gods. Thus it appears that we will be facing a force with both human and divine. Right, so up to this point, it's always been, these are just my cousins, they're a bunch of idiots, right? That's the way our Duryodhana has been thinking. But now Dhritarashtra hearing this and everybody saying, and it means, before it was a long way away, now it's imminent. Right, so now it's like he's looking at it and he's saying, Arjuna, his prowess, and then he's coupled with Krishna, and he knows that he's beyond everything, but he can't understand what that means, but he knows that there's something more. And then you have the different demigods who align themselves. I cannot see how we can win. Son, make peace with the Pandavas. If you do not, then the Kuru's end has come. Right. So the difficulty comes is Duryodhana, because he's been inspired by the demons. It doesn't matter what you say. They all said, we'll come and help. But he's not estimating that, wait a minute, you know, that all these, you know, different demons who are opposed to the demigods, they've been defeated by the demigods, right? Or even more, as they've been defeated by Narayan, you know? And so there's no demons that haven't been defeated by them. And now the two of them are here, so even if the demons say, we're going to help, it doesn't matter. But because of his attachment and his envy and all, he's blinded, he can't see properly. Duryodhana was losing his patience. All this antagonizing was too much. Agonizing. The prince jumped up in a rage. Oh, best of kings, why do you keep praising the Pandavas? They are mortals like the rest of us. How will the gods come to their assistance, right? But he's saying that he's thinking the demons will come to his. The gods are never impelled by base emotions. It is only by indifference to worldly desires, the absence of avarice, anger, and hatred, that they have attained their heavenly positions in the first place. They do not get involved in petty human struggles based on emotional attachments. Right? So he's saying petty human struggles based on emotional attachments. He's describing himself most perfectly here. That's probably the first correct thing he's ever really said. Were this not the case, then how could the Pandavas have undergone so much suffering? His point is because we were able to get them to do that, then all this stuff we talk about their greatness doesn't matter, because even they are the greatest, we are put them into difficulty. That means actually we're greater. That's why they think, no, but we're so much greater. And even if the gods do take their side, so what? I am the equal to any of them. He was defeated by a Gandharva, which are not as powerful as Indra. You know, the eight principal gods. And he was defeated by the Gandharvas. It wasn't a whole army, it was just a bunch of them. Right? By my own mystic power, I can stop fire from burning, even if it wishes to consume the three worlds. Now you know, like Krishna said, unless their time has come. You know. With incantations, I can solidify water, enable chariots and infantry to march over it. I can break apart mountains and send down showers of rocks accompanied by a gale like that which blows at the time of destruction. Right? So now the demons get puffed up by their mystic prowess, and they think that by that they can make anything happen, because it'll work on other mortals. But then when they're dealing with the Lord and these great devotees, it doesn't work. You know, it'll create a scene, an environment, a situation, but it will never be successful. As he praised himself, Duryodhana became increasingly enlivened, right? As he chants his own glories, he becomes inspired. He flailed his arms and glared at the kings in the assembly. You all know that in my kingdom there are no natural calamities caused by gods. Due to my protection, there are not even frightful beasts or snakes to assail my subjects. But the point is no, you're following the rules of the Veda. And if you rule properly according to what Manu dictates, then all these calamities won't be there. But he's thinking, no, it's because I am doing this. I'm making all this happen. All the citizens practice virtue and live peacefully under my rule. Neither the gods nor the Asuryas would dare protect anyone hated by me. Right? So he's taking it that I'm so great, I'm making all this happen. So therefore, and the demigods, they have to give their results because I'm doing my work, you know, standard karma kind of stuff. And so the demigods would not dare even support anybody that I don't like, because I'm so powerful. Right? You can see what a demon he is, because we're talking about Krishna, and he's just pointing out that no, he's the greatest. Why did the demigods not prevent from exiling the Pandavas or from taking their wealth? Right? So he's saying, I did all this, they did nothing. Whomever I desire to be happy or miserable meets with that end without fail. I am never thwarted in my aims, right? Though everything in with the Pandavas, technically, he was thwarted. You know, it means he sent them on exile, but the thing was is they were comfortable and happy there, you know, and everything went very nicely for them. O monarch, my words will not prove false. I am known in this world as one who speaks the truth. The world witnesses my fame and glory. I say this only to console you and not out of self-praise. Though we see he becomes more enlivened. You will soon hear of the Pandavas' defeat, rest assured. I am superior to them in intelligence, might, prowess, knowledge, and ability. I shall destroy them. Duryodhana, who was now in the center of the hall, strode back to his seat, his head held high. Karna applauded him, then stood to speak, disregarding Dhritarashtra, who had raised his hand in reply. So Dhritarashtra had raised his hand to speak, but Karna didn't care, he just spoke, stood up. Karna's voice rang around the assembly. I will take it upon myself to kill the Pandavas. I have received the Brahmastra from Parasaram and the Shakti from Indra. With these two weapons, I will destroy Pandu's sons. He has two celestial weapons. That, you know, so it means it's dangerous. It's a dangerous position. But what they're not counting is that if he's taking, because I have these two weapons, I will destroy them all. Arjuna has all the weapons of all the demigods. Well, he's not quite putting that together, right? All of the other Kurus may stay with Duryodhana to protect him. Leave the Pandavas to me, right? So Duryodhana is there's the king. All the other kings, you know, can be fighting with the army and that, but the Pandavas, I'll take care of myself. Bhishma laughed loud and long. Okay, before he's just sitting there and be a bunch of idiots with this, he just laughed. What are you saying, Karna? Your intelligence has obviously been dulled by death. Now approaches you, right? Because Krishna made that point before. And so Bhishma, being a Mahabhajan, you can understand Krishna's already decided on the fate. And that's the way it's going to go. So when one's going to die, one makes, you know, when one is destined to die, one starts to make mistakes. Remembering the incident of the burning of Kandva, you should restrain yourself, foolish one. Your Shakti weapon, of which you are so proud, will burn to ashes when Krishna's discus hits it. The Supreme Person has already destroyed enemies far greater than you, Karna. Meeting with him and Arjuna, you and all your weapons will be ruined. Bhishma reminded Karna how Parasaram had cursed him that when he most needed it, he would not be able to remember the incantations to invoke the Brahmastra. Karna had deceived the sage into thinking he was a Brahmin in order to receive his teachings. When Parasaram discovered the lie, he uttered this curse. Karna would not be able to use the Brahmastra weapon when he was faced with imminent danger, right? Because he got Brahmastra from Parasaram. I mean, regular things like that, you know, he's just fighting and everything's going and it's good. But when he's actually in danger, when he himself is personally in danger, he can't use it. You know, but if the battle is going smoothly, and then he can use it. And Arjuna would certainly not have the same difficulty. Right? Because Arjuna's not been cursed. He's been a kshatriya. He's always presented. He didn't use any tricks to get his knowledge. He simply, out of submission, served his guru very nicely. Karna snarled, "Your praise of Krishna is proper, O grandfather. I know him to be as great, even greater than you say. But I can no longer tolerate your cruel words towards me." But it says, "Your praise of Krishna, I understand. Because you say he's great, but he actually is greater than that." Like that. "But how you speak to me, you always find fault in me." Right? You know, it's just because it's personal. "Hear now the result of your harshness." Right? You know, now I'm going to chastise you. "I will not engage in battle as long as you are present. Rather, I will lay down my weapons until you are laid low. Then the world will see my prowess." And so this is another thing of, you know, death now approaches. You say something foolish. That means that on the battlefield can only be fighting either Bhishma or you. And he won't fight until Bhishma's. So either Bhishma doesn't even go on the battlefield and it's just him. You know, and he won't go on the battlefield, or Bhishma will go out, and when he's not fighting anymore, then he'll come. But instead of both of them fighting at once, now he's reduced that only one of them can be fighting at once, And he thinks that that's the solution. So he's just as foolish as Duryodhana. Though he does have that element that he has some respect for Krishna, which Duryodhana doesn't have at all. So you'll see is that Krishna will speak to Karna, you know, at a later point, and they'll have some proper, nice interaction like that. So there is some consideration for Karna like that. Because he being, I think, a Narakasura, then he knows the power of Krishna, right? That, because he's been killed by him. He's the one who destroyed all 99 of his kavachas, but left him with only one. So he left him with, he knocked all of them off, and then left one, and then killed him with it on. So that's why he was born with it. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai Shri Prabhupada ki Jai.